Electricity, a big idea that's inspired countless new ones. From powering the light bulb to virtually powering our entire lives. 30 years ago, State Street launched the Spider S&P 500 ETF, SPY. A big idea that inspired the world to invest differently. And still does. What can you do with SPY?
Before investing, consider the fund's investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Visit SSGA.com for a prospectus containing this and other information. Read it carefully before investing. SPY is subject to risks similar to those of stocks. All ETFs are subject to risk, including possible loss of principal. Alps Distributors, Inc. Distributor.
Live from the Nasdaq market site in the heart of New York City's Times Square, this is Fast Money. Here's what's on tap tonight. Riding high, AI keeps booming, obesity drugs keep climbing, and now transports and industrials are joining the party. Is this a good sign that this rally has more room to run? We'll debate that. Plus, a new AI upstart, the CEO of Perplexity, will join us. His chatbot has some big-time fans in tech land. Jensen Huang and Jeff Bezos use it. How he thinks his AI company can compete with the likes of Google and Microsoft. And later, ringing the register today at Macy's, inside the new offer for the retailer. Another draining day for Tesla. The stock is now down almost 25% this year. And the crypto climb continues. Bitcoin now up 56% in a month. I'm Melissa Lee, coming to you live from Studio B at the Nasdaq. On the desk tonight, Tim Seymour, Karen Feinerman, Dan Nathan, and Guy Adami. But we start off with a trifecta of trouble in the so-called Magnificent Seven. Tesla, Alphabet, and Apple sinking today, losing a combined $160 billion in market cap. Three one-time market heavyweights all down sharply this year. And yet the broader market seems to be okay, shrugging off this weakness. The S&P closing the day basically flat, while the Dow and Nasdaq were down less than 0.5%. And look at where the strength came from. NVIDIA up another 3.6%, setting a new all-time high. That stock is now up more than 250%. From a year ago. Lilly in the GLP space also continuing to gain. That stock quickly closing in on the trillion-dollar market cap club itself. But it's not all the same old stocks. Transports also at a record, with today's move higher, driven by Lyft's 4% pop. The IYT up nearly 20% in the past year. Industrials also on a tear. Names like Caterpillar up days in a row here. So what does this broadening out, or dare we say rotation, tell you about this market, Guy?
It's important. It's impressive. I mean, the Russell closed effectively unchanged. That's good, above 205 in the form of the IWM. The transports, if we could throw a quick chart, Tim's been flagging this for a while. I mean, we're at levels we probably saw 3.5-ish years or so ago. So it's critical, I think, that we sort of get through this 282 level, close above it, and for the next leg higher. But in terms of the broader market, again, we talked about this on Friday. I mean, the fact that Apple is now 175, Google double top, selling off, Tesla was awful today. All three of those things happen on one day, yet the market basically closes unchanged in terms of the S&P. Even I have to admit that's pretty damn impressive.
Even you as a long time.
Long time.
Skeptic.
First time, long time. Yeah, yeah.
Yes, yes. Tim.
So imagine watching the Magnificent Seven and seeing
61, 2.
Yeah. Yeah. Charles Bronson, Steve McQueen and Coburn get gunned down early. and suddenly, because that's Tesla, Apple and Google. And the dynamic here is that the whatever we're saying about the other 493, which Guy's pointing out, I think there's a lot to do there. There are very specific reasons why we can point to Apple running out of gas. I mean, think about Apple's issues in China. Think about their issues competing with Huawei. Think about their watch issues. Think about
Lack of AI.
Well, a lack of AI, and then obviously all the antitrust stuff that's going on, and frankly, a lack of growth even in their core product. And it's all been about multiple expansions. So we could go on, but I think we've largely been pretty cautious about Apple for a long time. I think the dynamic that the broader market is really moving at a time when it's a massive week, too. It's the Fed. You've got Humphrey Hawkins. You've got the Senate testimony. You've got non-farm payroll. You have a lot of Fed speak. And I think what you're going to hear from the Fed is they're going to have to talk about they're going to have to be careful about the financial conditions that have gotten so out of control that they're not helping them right now. I think they're going to be as cautious as they can be. I think they should be.
What do you think, Karen?
I agree with that. I think, no, we've talked about this a lot. Why should they?
Right.
Why cut? I feel like they're giving it away for free. No reason to do that. And also, some of the data doesn't even really fully support it. Some does, some doesn't. But I like to see the broadening out, though I do have a very, tech-heavy or Mag7-ish heavy portfolio. But if you look at, we're talking about the IWM. If you look at banks today, I mean, really doing well. And then this NYCB thing, which really was a tempest in a teapot, and really there didn't seem to be any consequences, nor I don't think there should have been. It seemed to me a very specific problem. So It does feel frothy, though, I got to say. I mean, you just saw how NVIDIA just levitated. I didn't really see any particular catalyst. Mm-hmm. So it does feel frothy, but, I'll look at upside calls. But the fundamental thesis of AI being in the early innings, I think, is still there.
Can you admit that the market broadening is actually a good sign, Dan? Because for a long time you said tech heavy, yeah. Mag 7, all bad news. It's going to, we're in for a fall, et cetera, et cetera. Here we are.
Yeah.
And we have some major components not participating, and we're okay.
Yeah, it doesn't
better
make
than
me,
okay.
Better than okay.
Better than okay.
But Karen is a bull, and she's ridden a lot of these kind of trends over the last, call it year or so. And you're starting to feel a little nervous about it. I mean, the broadening out, to a lot of these other sectors, I think, is very good. But, I read a stat today. I think it was Bloomberg Intelligence that suggested that the top seven stocks, Q4, had nearly 60% earnings growth in the quarter. The rest of the 493 had a 1.5% drop, right? So if the stock market is a discounting mechanism, right? So right now, you're basically suggesting that the rest of the 493 are about to inflect from an earnings standpoint. And that's not exactly the case. I mean, estimates had been coming down for all of 23, and then you saw these companies beat them a whole heck of a lot. So I guess what I'm here right now is we're at 20.5 times on a forward basis. That's higher than the 10, 5-year, all that sort of stuff. Valuation, not a great timing tool, but to your question, is I think the narrowness of the market is getting increasingly narrow. That's the story of today. That's the story of losing Apple on fundamentals, losing Google on fundamentals, losing Tesla on fundamentals. What do you lose next? If you lose Microsoft on fundamentals, and I'm not saying that's going to happen, but if for some reason they start to disappoint or they can't kind of guide the way that they have, at some point that stock will come in. The rest of the stuff is just not going to make up a lot of the slack. So the fact that we closed unchanged today after making record highs in the S&P and the Nasdaq, great. Have at it, people. But that doesn't make me feel like we're going to be up for another 8% in a straight line if you start losing the leadership, because the leadership is the leadership.
Well, 8% in a straight line, anytime it happens, is always scary. And so there's no question that we have a lot of overbought charts out there. You can work that off pretty quickly, though. And so what's fascinating about this market is you could have missed the entire semiconductor rally, the entire one. You could have been asleep. You could have woken up in AI and NVIDIA had a few great quarters. And October 26th, which was that day I refer to as when the markets really started to move. And you just bought that day. You're up 66% in semi, 66%. But what is encouraging to me is that the XRT is breaking out and that we're also seeing staples come around. And so, and I think some of this is earnings resilience. I don't, these stats you're bringing up, Dan, are right. I think I pointed out that I think if you look at the return of the S&P last year, 2/3 of that came from multiple expansion. If you look at it this year, it's probably about the same percent, 4.5% of the 8 that we have. So maybe it's closer to 55%. But you have a dynamic here where it's hard to get bulled up about earnings. But at the same time, what we're learning from a lot of these big industrial companies is they're running their businesses better. These were industrial companies that were in very bad bear markets for a year and a half. So the price action to me in the broader market, I think, is very encouraging. When you look at the semis and you look at NVIDIA, Karen, you're right. I don't know what went on today. I don't know why NVIDIA got another 4.5% today. I don't know why Taiwan Semi is quietly doing the same thing as NVIDIA is every day. And that doesn't surprise me because Taiwan Semi is arguably one of the most important companies.
And I want to make one really important point. So two stocks today driving this action. At one point, Taiwan Semi was up 5%. They make 90% of the high-end GPUs on the planet, and so does NVIDIA, right? So when you think about it, NVIDIA, obviously different. They're a fab, Taiwan Semi.
Or NVIDIA.
Right, okay. But and we know that NVIDIA has four customers that make up 50% of the revenue. I mean, what I'm saying is it's like an enigma wrapped in a riddle. It's like one of those Russian dolls in a way. You know what I'm saying?
Concentrated.
It doesn't end well, guys. I mean, that's it. So the bubble can keep inflating. It can keep going. But, I look at Supermicro, which is up 1,000% in a year. And it just got added to the S&P 500. Here's a company that has, 15% gross margins, okay? So on the other end, we're talking about NVIDIA. We're really excited about because they just got it to 77%, and that justifies that sort of thing. This is going into the S&P 500. Okay, with a $60 billion market cap, and it's gone up like this. You see my finger here, people? It's a straight line, okay? Mm-hmm. How do you think that's going to fare in the S&P 500 from a performance standpoint? This stuff, we've seen this before, and it's at periods that probably, precede something.
But you equate what we're seeing right now with the internet bubble.
Oh, 100%.
Which not many people are willing to go. They're not
forget
willing
the valuation.
To say,
it doesn't matter. It's the sentiment. It's the psychology around it. It's like no one can see it ending. That's what's important. You can say Cisco is so different than NVIDIA right here, but they're really not.
But the outcome will be different if it's based not on valuation. If it's just sentiment, fine. Yeah. But if you're making the comparison on valuation, then it will.
I'm not. Have I said that? I haven't said that. I mean,
so
like,
don't you think that's an underpinning, though, of that? Valuations that are just so untethered from reality.
I'm not saying that.
Hold up under the weight of their own, you know, expectations.
Right. Well, listen, convince yourself that NVIDIA is dirt cheap right here and keep buying it. It probably goes to 1,000. I'm just saying it probably goes to 1,000, but then it's going to be going to 500 at some point.
It's not dirt cheap, but with the kind of growth that they've shown and with the head start that they have, you know, you're talking about we could throw a lot of numbers around, but the reality is it's probably somewhere between 35 and 50 times 2024 and 2025. And that's a big ask. But the point is, for a company that's growing this much, that's changing the world and is at the center of it, I just think a lot of people have found themselves having to really make significant adjustments in how they're looking at this. And that includes me. So I look at other periods we've had over the last 15 years when we've seen companies. This is probably as unique. We've seen Tesla do weird things. And at times we've even seen Apple do this. But, this is as extraordinary as we've seen. And I can appreciate that part of the market right now to me is extraordinary. It's not just NVIDIA. It is AMD. It is, Taiwan Semi's really not that expensive. But I get back to some of the companies that were, I mean, when GM was trading less than 4x earnings, was that right? You know, when Citibank was trading at 0x 0.45 price to tangible book, was that right? And I don't think those things were. So that's the part of this that I can feel pretty good about. Like this broader market and allocation to healthcare and energy and utilities and consumer staples, I think it should continue. And I think the Fed's going to give us a lot of reasons this week why that will continue.
Well, we also brought up Friday. You don't see it all that often, but we've seen it before. I mean, Apple now has become a source of funds. Clearly, Tesla has been, and to a certain extent, Google as well. For all three, for very different reasons, doesn't matter. It's happening with all three. Apple, maybe just sort of in terms of multiple, just in terms of valuation, doesn't make sense in this environment. Google, maybe a technical thing, some of their own problems. And obviously, Tesla is a China thing, I believe, and other issues as well. Yet with that said, it's clear people are fleeing those and getting into the stocks that move 2 and 3% a day. However, you know, we talked about the IYT. Pull up a Taiwan Semi chart just because, and look at it over the last 3 years. I mean, it's had a gigantic move, but it gets us right back to levels that we saw probably 3.5 years ago. We've seen a number of charts, if you go longer term, that look exactly like this. You know, these double tops that keep sort of cropping up out of nowhere. They're evident all over the spectrum of stocks we look at.
I was just, Dan and I were fighting before the show. We fight before the show, during the show, after the show sometimes. And we were talking about the same thing, this bubble, sentiment. And I just come back to Cisco, which was the NVIDIA of its day in that last 99-2000 bubble. It was the infrastructure for the internet,
backbone.
The backbone of the internet and the bellwether for everything. And it was trading at almost 400 times earnings. And that's just a different universe than where we are right now. So ultimately, will it find a period where it's cut in half? Yeah, that is highly likely. I just don't think it's in the near term.
All right. Our next guest says the Mag 7 should be rebranded as the Fantastic Four, with NVIDIA and Meta hitting fresh highs today. Amazon, Microsoft also solidly higher for the year. Satori Fund founder Dan Niles joins us now with more on where big tech is going from here. Dan, great to have you with us. And I just want to, start off with the debate that we've been having here on the desk as to whether or not you think this AI-led rally is anything like what we saw back during the internet bubble. I mean, you lived through those times. You worked through those times as well.
I mean, it is and it isn't. I guess the way I would look at it is the following. Netscape Navigator was launched in December of 1994. And so if you think about from that period, when did NASDAQ peak? It peaked in March of 2000. So it took you a good 5 years for that bubble to really build. And did you get corrections along the way and drawdowns? Of course you did. But like the peak took you 5 years. And so we only heard about ChatGPT in November of 2022. And so you're into this a year and a quarter. So from a time perspective, you haven't had really what you need for a good bubble to build up. Now, that doesn't mean that the NASDAQ can't go down 10 to 15% come this summer. Wouldn't surprise me at all. But from a valuation perspective, it's nowhere near that either, where if you look at Cisco, it was growing revenues at 59% in 2000. You know, the forward multiple was about 138 at its peak, 138 times, and NVIDIA is trading at about like 38 times, growing 90%. So valuation, you're not there either. And so it depends if you're talking short term, is the market frothy and are some of the estimates make no sense, like NVIDIA is going to grow revenues each quarter for the next eight quarters at 6% each with no down? Yeah, that makes no sense. I would bet you anything that NVIDIA will have a down quarter in the next 2 years, and it could be substantial. But from a valuation perspective or a long-term perspective related to time, you can't say that we're there.
So you want to cut out three of the Mag 7, or what's known as a Mag 7 currently, Apple, Google, as well as Tesla. Do you think that there's no hope for them, that they're permanently out?
No, I mean, I think it's, I'm an earnings-driven investor. So I'm not somebody that's going to be buying something with no earnings and expecting the multiple to double, triple, quadruple while margins are going down. So I like earnings. If you look at Apple, if you owned it last year, you made money. But you made money with the estimates getting cut every single quarter that they reported. Why? Because people went from the Fed raising rates at the fastest rate since the 1970s to the rate cuts stopped, and then we were discounting seven rate cuts at its peak looking forward into this year. That's why Apple went up. Tesla's a similar situation where EPS went down 50% from the beginning of last year through the end of last year for the December quarter that they reported, and then they missed that, but the stock doubled. So this year, I think the difference is sort of, you know, those rate cuts have gone from seven cuts to three. We're now focused more on earnings, and Apple missed yet again in terms of the forward numbers got cut. Tesla, the forward numbers got cut again, but people actually cared. With Google, you've got a different situation where, you know, based on internal politics or whatever, they are doing a bad job of moving to this AI generation. Now, they could change that overnight if they just fired probably 10% of their workforce and said, look, we're going to provide accurate answers, not politically correct answers, because they have more data than anybody on the planet. They can give you what you need for an AI conversational search product, but they just won't do it. So with Google, that's the one I have the most hope for, because it's them just changing the way they operate, and they could fix the issues overnight if they wanted to. But Google, again, missed their search advertising revenues. They missed their YouTube revenues, because don't forget, you have things like TikTok and ad-supported tiers at Amazon, et cetera, taking time, ad dollars and time away from things like YouTube. And so you have an earnings-related thing going on there as well.
Dan, it's Karen. I just wanted to drill down a little bit more on Google, which is a big position for me and painful. Is the catalyst for you that they start to get something right and you buy it higher, or is that it comes in to a level where you're like, you know what, this is just discounting the business too much?
Well, here's the thing you have to think about, I think, Karen. They have over 90% market share, and you're going to have Perplexity on later. It's a really good product. They provide accurate answers. ChatGPT provides accurate answers. And when you put in something into an algorithm, you get an output and you go, these are the images of our founding fathers? And you go like, that makes no sense. You know, it's easy to give up some of that share to something that gives you accurate answers. And so that's what I would be concerned about with Google as it relates to search. But don't forget, YouTube has got its own set of issues that they can't get around. It's not like Amazon's going to not show ads on Prime Video, or Disney's not going to show an ad tier, or Netflix, et cetera. And so those are pressures that are just going to kind of continue. The multiple, though, you look at it and you go, really? Trading at one multiple point below the S&P 500? You have a presidential election coming up. I really want to get long Google. But right now, it doesn't seem like they're showing any signs of fixing the problems internally with how they are presenting search when you use it inside Gemini, their search product. And so that's what I'm kind of waiting for, is to see some signs that they're willing to say, we're going to focus on providing accurate results, and then you guys figure out what you want to do with it as users. But, you know, they don't want to alienate the 3.5 billion people that use their product, which is a separate issue. And so that's what makes this one a tough one. But I really do want to buy this. I actually covered my short position on that and Apple today. And, you know, we'll see, for different reasons. But, you know, we'll see what happens. I plan on reshorting them higher probably. But both for different reasons look like they could bounce from a short-term perspective.
Hey, Dan, so we spent a lot of time talking about this, you know, Mag 7, now Fab 4, if you will. But there's a lot of other names. And Karen made this point earlier, you know, about Adele and what they had to say and how they're participating in the demand picture. Does this give you greater confidence that like the whole trade, the whole, you know, when we use the term bubble, again, it doesn't have to be a negative thing until it pops, right? Until you see some really weird behavior. I thought that Dell was trading at 80 and then closed, I don't know, up 25 bucks or something like that, you know, after the result. That seems like, you know, a little aggressive to me. But I'm just curious, give us a take on how this thing is broadening out and are there any names that you find really interesting right here away from the Mag 7 or whatever there?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, as you said, in terms of bubbles. I mean, Alan Greenspan famously talked about irrational exuberance, but that was in 1996 and the S&P doubled between there and 2000. So, you know, things can continue for a period of time. For me, as you asked, Dan, you know, we are broadening our universe. We still love Meta. Unlike Google, they're doing everything pretty much right with AI right now, which is, I guess, the only thing that should scare you. And we like Amazon because they're doing a really good job of being the cloud vendor for a lot of AI applications. And so we still like that. But beyond that, yeah, we're trying to find, you know, names in industrial. We talked about the XBI, the biotech ETF, being one of our top five picks entering the year. We're trying to find other areas beyond just the super heavy tech trade and AI trade that's going on. Because if you look at Dell and somebody said, hey, Dan, Dell, when they guide their forward April quarter, they're going to guide EPS below where the street is. Your first thought wouldn't be, well, the stock's going to be up 20%+. So there's a lot of things, or Supermicro getting added to the S&P, but up, you know, 20%. Like, there's a lot of things going on where in individual stuff, I mean, Dell's a great company. And, you know, relative to Supermicro, I'd much rather own Dell all day long. So don't get me wrong there. But there are certain pockets that really make me concerned, and which is why we're broadening. Today we spent, you know, we took down our exposure a lot because I was just looking at how different things were acting. And I'm like, you know, I know we're in the short-term frothy phase and I just want to sit on more cash, get rid of my more speculative stuff. We sold our Bitcoin ETF late last week, you know, as another example. We had tweeted about liking it when the, you know, SEC approved the 11, but I think, you know, just lightening up a little bit, taking some risk off the table. Mm-hmm. It's not a bad idea at this point.
Dan, always great to speak with you. Thank you.
Thank you,
Dan
Melissa.
Niles of Satori Fund. What do you make of Dan's assessment?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, it's in terms of technology, quickly, because we're up against it, but there's an expression called outkicking your coverage that Tim probably knows a lot about, but we won't get into it. But I'll say this, in terms of NVIDIA outkicking their coverage without earning their revenues. I mean, you're talking about a company at 29 times, very reasonable. Trades at 19 times revenues, though. So something's got to give. And what that means is, I think at a certain point, the margins that they're enjoying at 77%, almost by definition, historically, have to come down in that space.
Coming up, a Macy's markup shares jumping as an activist ups its bid for the department store chain. Details on the new offer and if it's enough for a miracle on 34th Street. That's next. Plus, financial flexing, big banks getting a boost. Morgan Stanley a standout, up 4%. So can these names keep climbing? We'll debate that when Fast Money returns.
This is Fast Money with Melissa Lee, right here on CNBC.
The spirit of performance defines Acura, and now it's electric. Introducing the all-electric ZDX, Acura's most powerful SUV yet. While what powers their cars may change, the energy that makes Acura never will. Crafted using the same formula that brought them electrified supercars and multiple IMSA championships, the ZDX has track-tested performance that packs an energy all its own. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system and up to 313-mile range on a single charge and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is everything they said electric could never be. It was built with the driver in mind, just like Acura has been doing since the beginning. We could talk all day, but the only way to experience this electric performance is to drive it yourself. Unlock the energy and order yours at Acura.com.
Wouldn't it be great to have all your investment and retirement accounts in one place? Yahoo Finance, our sponsor today, makes it easy. I use it to put my investment account and 401k accounts into one hub and get expert tips that help me confidently manage my money. For more than 25 years, Yahoo Finance has been the brand behind every great investor. Whether you're a seasoned investor or are looking for that extra guidance, Yahoo Finance gives you all the tools and data you need in one place. They're the number one finance destination, producing a holistic look at the financial news cycle, including breaking news, original editorial perspectives, analyst ratings, independent research, customizable charts, and so much more. Securely link your brokerage accounts for a unified view of your wealth, including 401k and other investments. A comprehensive perspective is what sets apart great investors, and it's how Yahoo Finance ensures you have the insight to look at your wealth in its entirety. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit the brand behind every great investor, yahoofinance.com, the number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com. That's yahoofinance.com.
Welcome back to Fast Money. Shares of Macy's topping the tape today on reignited talks of a takeover. Activist investors Arkhouse Management and Brigade Capital upping their buyout bid on Sunday to $24 a share, the stock jumping more than 13% today. The new offer is a 33% premium to last Friday's close, valuing the legacy retailer at about $6.6 billion. Macy's releasing a statement that it received and will evaluate the offer. You predicted this. They did offer some more details on the financing, where the money is coming from. Mm-hmm. So maybe that's more convincing or...
A little bit, although where the stock's trading doesn't tell you the street is really convinced that these guys are real. At $20 and, I don't know, 50 cents or so-ish where it closed, I mean, that's a pretty significant discount. So they've got to really, you know, get people on board to really increase the pressure on Macy's. What do you do if you're Macy's now? So this isn't a tender offer. You don't have a, you know, a time within which you have to respond, but you do have to respond. And I think they'll probably say, all right, let's see a little bit more details about your financing, and then maybe we'll let you do a little bit of due diligence. What I think Macy's really is hoping for is a terrible credit market, a difficult spring, and the business is terrible and these guys go away. That's what I think. What I think these guys are hoping for is Macy says we're up for sale and that they aren't ultimately the buyers, that it goes higher maybe to someone else. But so I'm long. I actually bought a little bit more today. I think there's a couple more episodes of this one.
Well, remember when the story of Macy's was always around the balance sheet and what you were seeing maybe in the bond market. And if you look at the bonds right now, most of the folks have them as kind of double B, double B minus, and even without this bid, have them neutral. And if you look at the earnings they just put out, the free cash flow is excellent. It beat the street. So operating cash flow minus their CapEx came in around $910 million. It's a company that we've always talked about the intrinsic value of the real estate, but this is a company that, in terms of their income statement, has actually been very interesting. They were very cautious on their guide, but the trends here are, I think, better than expected. And for investors that are just trying to gauge whether this is a decent investment with or without the bid, I think it's not a bad place to be.
Overall, retail REITs have even been doing better, like Simon and Macy's Ranch and all those names.
Some of those stocks up 45-50% since the lows, I think, in the fall, without question. I mean, you wonder if it's, is that just an oversold bounce and we're getting ready for the second wave of the whole CRE thing? We'll see. But, you know, there was a day back in the 80s and 90s, like leverage buyouts were a thing way back when. But, you know, this would be an interesting candidate in a different era for that, because what Karen is basically saying is Macy's hope these people go away because they think that offer is way too cheap and they think they could probably do better without them.
There's a lot more Fast Money to come. Here's what's coming up next.
Big banks bulking up as investors pile into the financial space. The names seeing some outsized moves. Next, plus searching for a winner. The AI race rages on and the chatbot battle is taking center stage. How a startup in the search space is looking to take on the likes of Google and OpenAI. You're watching Fast Money live from the NASDAQ market site in Times Square. We're back right after this.
What's on the horizon for financial markets? At PGIM, it's a question that over 1,400 investment professionals relentlessly research in pursuit of your long-term goals. Specialized across asset classes, but united in collaboration, our teams provide global and local expertise. Our investments shape tomorrow, today. Pursue your tomorrow with PGIM, a leading global asset manager.
We'll be right back.
Welcome back to Fast Money. Big banks seeing strength today. Sizable moves in Morgan Stanley, Bank of America, and Wells Fargo helping lead the group. The KBE Bank ETF, though, still down more than 3% this year, and the regionals are faring even worse still today. Regionals did okay, considering the news on NYCB, to your point, Karen, which proves that it's really an idiosyncratic thing, and other banks are
hopefully
moving higher. Yeah,
yes,
hopefully.
I think so. I think that was a unique set of problems there. But, I mean, I think as this market is just looking for things that aren't so crazy expensive, banks are really a good place to be. I mean, for me, I own the money center banks, J.P. Morgan, the biggest one. But they're still, I mean, they've moved very nicely. This is all-time highs, but it's not like they're in, you know, crazy town where Dan would hang out and say bad things about them.
Well, and again, until the rally that has Bank of America about 41% off of those October lows and Citi around 45% off those lows, they were being treated as if there was something wrong. And it wasn't just dynamics around loans and mark-to-market and held-to-maturity securities and the dynamics around the fixed income markets. But I think there was a sense that there was really something broken in their business model. Meanwhile, if you think about the benefits of where at least AI and efficiency, I think the year of efficiency is going on at Citigroup. I mean, this is what we've been hearing about. And this is a bank that for a long time, this is what they needed. So they're more focused. By the way, this is also a bank that pays almost 4% dividend. Not the reason to go out and buy a bank. But if you think about banks as a group, after SVB, there was some question about what banks were going to be able to do with their capital. And I think what they're able to do is exactly what they have been doing.
There was a stretch of time last fall when we would come in and say, what is wrong with Bank of America? Am I in your head?
I can't believe it. What is wrong with Bank of America? I'm looking around to see if it's behind me.
Because it was trading like nobody wanted to touch with a 9-foot pole.
It was in the fall. We were having these conversations.
Yes.
I forget the analysts. Forgive me. You take copious notes, as I mentioned. I'm sure it's in.
I don't take guest notes, though.
One of the analysts said they thought Citi could trade up to $100. And we said that might be a little ridiculous. Right. However, $60 is not crazy in terms of the metrics Tim pointed out, price to tangible book and those things. Close at 56. I think about a week or so ago, I saw an upgrade to 65. Now it's getting to levels that actually do make sense. The question is, do you still ride the Citi train or is this sort of late in the game?
Isn't it a 10-foot pole? You wouldn't touch something with a 10-foot pole?
Is it?
You said 9-foot. Yeah,
although with inflation, it might be 12 feet.
Well, there you go, right. But the one thing, a bit crazy town, sister. All right, yeah. So here's the thing. Like, if you're right reaching for Citibank right now at this stage of the rally, I mean, it's probably getting long in the
tooth. What if you're reaching for Morgan Stanley?
It's fine.
I mean,
IPOs are going to pick up, and you know
that was a stealthy would you rather.
It solves a myriad of problems for the banks, including Bank of America, which is probably why the stock is somewhat.
So I have a question for you. Everything is so rosy in the economy and the markets. Why don't we have IPOs? Where are the IPOs?
It takes a little time. It's not like you can instantly get an IPO out there. Yeah, I think you got to, you know, and they got to freshen up.
You don't even hear people we don't hear the chatter of a bunch of these deals right now. Where's Stripe? Why isn't Stripe coming to market?
I don't know if they. I don't know. That's a good question.
I wouldn't be surprised if you see a bunch of AI companies come.
Yeah.
So Citibank. Citibank has underperformed the S&P by 50% over the last 5 years. Now, there's a lot of things that explain that. But in terms of chasing, and that's not necessarily a valuation exercise we're doing here, but in terms of where I think there are weightings and financials and where people have not been at their weightings, and if you just look at core S&P weightings, I think banks are going overweight, and I think that's all it takes.
Coming up, the AI landscape is changing fast. We'll sit down with the co-founder and CEO of Perplexity to find out how the world's first answer engine is upping the pressure on the space's mega cap incumbents. Plus, more trouble for Tesla shares plunging today on bad news out of China and shipments specifically. We'll dig into the numbers, debate whether the stock can shift back into drive right after this.
Missed a moment of Fast? Catch us anytime on the go. Follow the Fast Money Podcast. We're back right after this.
Welcome back to Fast Money. Stocks kicking off the week in the red. The S&P with a small loss, so the index did hit a new intraday record during the session, the Dow dropping nearly 100 points. The Nasdaq leading the losses today, down about 0.4%. Crude's high energy rally taking a breather. WTI pulling back slightly today, despite OPEC Plus extending its production cuts through June. Russia also cutting its output in coordination with the move. Oil is up more than 10% so far this year. Shares of Pfizer down once again today. That stock hitting its lowest level in 11 years. On the other side, some names hitting all-time highs today. Chipotle, Lennar, Costco, Marathon Petroleum, Martin Marietta, the M in M, all at record.
Guy's Clam.
Guy's Clam is doing really well. Yeah. Meantime, the AI landscape is evolving at breakneck speed, and some smaller companies are starting to make real progress in competing with the big guys. Our next guest is doing just that. Arvind Srinivas is the co-founder and CEO of Perplexity, which calls itself the world's first AI answer engine. Arvind, great to have you with us.
Thank you for having me here.
I'm curious, what do you make of Microsoft, Google, you know, you name it, the competitors out there? I mean, who do you think is doing well? Who's doing poorly? Because the market is speaking in terms of where they're rewarding companies and where they're taking market cap away.
Microsoft is obviously doing tremendously well and like trying to get their products out into as many enterprises as possible, trying to create so many different co-pilots, co-pilots for finance, co-pilots for health, and you know, the workspace, co-pilot for Office 365. So they're like really moving very fast on integration with the enterprise, and definitely one of the fastest and best executing companies out there.
The worst, because the market seems to think Apple has no product and Google stinks.
I would say that we should wait for Apple until, like, you know, they put out their update on Siri. It seems like it's high time, and they've been like releasing a lot of interesting things on machine learning there. But Google seems to be the one that has the most difficulty in executing, clearly because of their, you know, business model. And like, first of all, when you ask the average person in the United States what they associate Google with, they associate Google with being accurate. Like, I Googled it. It just means you got it right. Like, there's no more fact checking anymore. But in the age of AI, in the age of answer bots, where you do have to deal with hallucinations, you do have to deal with mistakes and like different ethics of different AI models, that's not their strong point. Like, that's actually where, like, you know, any mistake that they make is highlighted even more than mistakes made by Microsoft or mistakes made by OpenAI or mistakes made by Perplexity. Mistakes made by Google are like magnified a lot more. So that makes it a lot more difficult for Google to execute well in this generative AI space.
Arvind, give us a sense. I've been using your product and I'm very happy with it. A lot of my friends, especially in tech and finance, have been using it and, again, really like it. And we can't remember the last time. It takes us back to Google maybe 20 years ago, where we kind of remember using a brand new product, taking on incumbents. What was the problem that you were trying to solve, differentiated from that, from some of the big incumbents in the space right now?
Honestly, when I was trying to hire our first employee, he asked me for health insurance, and I didn't even know like what many of the terms like coinsurance or deductibles, any of these things meant. And I immediately go to Google to like look for like what different insurance providers offer, and like all I get is a bunch of ads, because insurance is a big ad word category. But I wanted an answer of like, what is the best plan I could go for as a startup with very little funding? And so we created this tool that could just directly answer your question and not like waste your time through links and spam and ads. And that ended up being a next version of what search could look like what PageRank did to portals like Yahoo, which just sold real estate to like advertisers. That's what answer bots are doing to the 10 blue link search engine that is Google, because it's now selling that 10 blue link UI itself as a highest margin internet business model ever created, right? But again, like, what the users want dictates what like users use. And it's no longer this thing where you're wasting time sifting through links, but you can just directly go and ask your question and get an answer, save a lot of time. And like, at least when you start using these searches, the highest paid people or the top paid people in the United States, knowledge workers, when they stop using Google for day-to-day searches at work time, because people are incentivized to be more productive and save time, that makes a big dent on like, you know, what these people are thinking of Google in their own like day-to-day workflow. And it's slowly going to change your habits as we progress.
On February 24th, Jensen Huang said he uses Perplexity every day. You're his go-to AI. How does that make you feel? What does that do to the company, the valuation, your future going forward?
First of all, I'm super proud. I'm a huge fan of Jensen Huang, and like the fact that he uses Perplexity and ChatGPT every day, tells you already, right? The world is changing. Like, Timu had this ad, like, shop like a billionaire. So it's almost like search like a billionaire. If you really wanted to search like a billionaire, billionaires don't have time, so they just want answers. So I'm sure everyone wants to live like a billionaire and wants to save time and have more time for themselves. And that'll automatically create a world where we are using answer bots every day and interacting with them through voice form factors. All these things are going to happen in the coming months and years. And we will look back like 5 years from now, we are going to look back and be like, oh, wow, like we were using this 10 blue links for like so long. And now suddenly a new technology and a new form factor has been unleashed. And like, look how much easier our life is and how much easier access to information has become.
In a year, though, are we going to say, oh, yeah, we spoke to the Perplexity CEO. That was before they were bought by Apple.
Well, I have seen your comment about this in your previous show. Like, I think one of you said be a pocket change for Apple. But look, that's not what motivates us. What motivates us is like a real like mission to drive the change from links to answers. Definitely, Apple can also make such changes happen. Like, look, if there's one company that's so powerful to like just change the swipe down to a Siri assistant instead of Google search, it's Apple, right? So we have to wait and watch what they do.
All right. Arvind, great to have you with us. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Arvind Srinivas of Perplexity. This just shows you how this landscape can really quickly change from day to day. And maybe, the way he outlines the landscape, maybe Alphabet does have a little bit of concern there.
I mean, first of all, fascinating interview. Congrats, because they clearly are at a different edge of search and answers as mission statement. And clearly, we've been dancing around Google in the AI world. But the reality is, if search as we know it, we know that's changing. And seemingly, Google should be in the pole position. But again, if Mr. Market is always right, maybe it's telling us exactly that.
Coming up, Tesla stalling out, shares dropping hard as China shipments plunge. How rising EV competition is dragging on the stock next. Fast Money's back in two. Welcome back to Fast Money. Shares of Tesla seeing a power drain today, falling more than 7% on new shipments out of its Shanghai factory, plunged to the lowest level in more than a year. A preliminary report showing a 16% decline in February from the previous month. The Lunar New Year period likely played a role. People don't go out and buy cars during that time, typically. On a year-on-year basis, shipments were down almost 20%. Tesla was the worst performer in both the NASDAQ 100 and the S&P 500 today. The stock is now down 24% so far this year. We should note that BYD had similar declines. So it's not just necessarily a Tesla problem. Maybe it's an EV problem. But what did you think of the
decline? I think the Tesla's got issues without question. Now, if you think about it, at $190-ish, now it's down more than 50% from its all-time high 3 or so years ago on a NASDAQ that's making seemingly all-time highs every day. So as much as people look for that move from 100 to 300 in Tesla a year or so ago and say, wow, you missed that, the stock is still down more than 50% from its all-time high. So clearly something is going on. And this little relief rally that we saw and have a move today on 130 million shares probably tells you there's more room on the downside.
Yeah, and I think it's important to note. I mean, like literally a year and a half ago or 2 years when this was a trillion-dollar market cap company, the narrative around EVs and Tesla leading the way and Elon Musk being the thing is not too different than the narrative around AI and Jensen Huang and NVIDIA. And it's not a comparison about the valuations or this. Narratives are narratives. They drive investment activity. They drive the excitement around these sorts of things. And so here this stock is. It's been more than cut in half over those 3 year periods. And I just remind you that the fundamentals of this company, while it was going up last year, were really bad. You know what I mean? Like, and they're getting worse right now. So like, to me, I just think it's important to kind of take these situations and try to extrapolate them how they can go to other bubbles.
Coming up, sitting on a gold mine, the precious metal jumping to new heights as Bitcoin eyes at very same level as the crypto surge continues. So can both of these rallies keep going? We've got the trade next when Fast Money comes right back. Welcome back to Fast Money. It was a record day for two types of gold. First, gold futures settling at the highest level ever. The precious metal up nearly 1.5% today and settling above $2,100 for the first time. Digital gold, meantime, aka Bitcoin, also in rally mode. The cryptocurrency topping 67,000 for its highest level since November 2021. It is just 2% off of its record. And I know, Tim, you came up here to set. You were giddy with gold settling at a new closing high.
I just think gold is so maligned and misunderstood and not given its due. It's an all-time high, and I've said this thousands of times now. Sorry, but I'm going to say it again. It's the best 20-year chart out there, and I think it's going higher. And I've got another 20 years, I hope, to continue to follow it. But I don't think you have to. I think there are dynamics here. I added the gold miners today who have grossly underperformed. And it's that's tough for me to explain, because if you think about the components of, say, the GDX, I think those are decent companies. As a whole, gold miners, I think, as a group, are trading, are operating more efficiently and are much better run and are not just digging for the sake of digging. But so I like gold miners here. I love gold. And it is, you know, Bitcoin is digital gold. So if Bitcoin's working, gold should be working. It's amazing how the tail's wagging the dog.
Are you so surprised that the Bitcoin rally continues?
I am a little bit surprised, to be honest. I think it actually says more for gold, because some of that gold money is actually going to Bitcoin, right? A lot of the underpinnings of why you want to own gold in an inflationary environment and with governments going up, you know, just being irresponsible, those two things should trade together, and they have. So staying long.
Up next, final trades. Final trades, Tim.
Big showdown in the world's most famous arena. Rangers 5-3, I think. EWJ Japan breaking out.
Karen?
Yes. If you want to look for value in this market that Dan's so upset about, JP Morgan 11 times.
Always.
And nice dividend.
So upset. SMH, that's the ETF that tracks the semiconductor sector. I'd be a seller.
Guy.
Mel was exercised that Russell Wilson apparently. Yeah, was let go.
She wasn't surprised, actually.
She wasn't surprised. She saw this coming. JetBlue, you'll see a bit of a relief rally continue, Melissa Lee.
All right, thanks for watching Fast. See you back here tomorrow. Mad Money with Jim Cramer starts right now.
All opinions expressed by the Fast Money participants are solely their opinions and do not reflect the opinions of CNBC, NBC Universal, their parent company or affiliates, and may have been previously disseminated by them on television, radio, internet, or another medium. You should not treat any opinion expressed on this podcast as a specific inducement to make a particular investment or follow a particular strategy, but only as an expression of an opinion. Such opinions are based upon information the Fast Money participants consider reliable, but neither CNBC nor its affiliates and or subsidiaries warrant its completeness or accuracy, and it should not be relied upon as such. To view the full Fast Money disclaimer, please visit cnbc.com/Fast Money Disclaimer.
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. So you need a business partner just like you. Like FedEx, who understands your passion for serving your customers because they have the same commitment towards you. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the U.S. on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. What's more, FedEx Ground is faster to more locations than UPS Ground. Trust FedEx for timely deliveries. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively FedEx.